Dan, how are you? We missed you in first class.
Yeah, I was healing with some things, so...
Well, that's all right, not that you don't know how to access the material.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting day.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, your partner is most anxious to meet you.
Good.
Keith, yeah. He's cool. You like him.
Good. I had a dream last night, and there were some people that I was consulting with about different things in my life.
Right.
And you were there.
I was there. In what mode?
In voice. And you said, you told me, you said, yeah, I just want to tell you everything cosmically is going the way it should. How's that?
Well, that's a nice thing for me to say. I approve.
I thought that was kind of neat.
Yes, indeed. Tom, have you been hearing any voices in your dreams? Yo, Tom.
Yes, here I am.
I just was curious if you've had any prophetic dreams of late.
Not necessarily any that come to my mind, but I have had some pretty intense dreams.
Just intense dreams in of themselves.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I understand that. It's been a bit intense for me too, but we all carry on as best we can. So, well, let's light our candles and go ahead. I don't know if others are joining or not. Jennifer, are you with us? No. Sometimes she doesn't say.
Are we lighting our candles?
Yeah. Randy?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Ah.
What a good guess on your part. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Let me know when you're all ready.
Ready. Ready.
Child of wonder, child of pain, nourish our spirit,
and protect our aim.
So it would be useful if you guys have in front of you, let's see, I'll tell you which class, 27?
Mm-hmm.
It says Spellwork Directors and Limiters, because that's what I'll be focusing on, that's what we'll be doing.
All right.
So if anybody needs a moment to get that, let me know.
I'm ready.
Randy, how about you?
I'm ready.
Okay, cool. Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All righty. Of course, when it mentions sonics, which actually comes before this, you all haven't had it. So don't worry about that. I won't be leaning on that or anything. This will be pretty straightforward. So the types of spells. A spell is any psychic or magical operation that combines a number of elements, air, fire, water, and earth, and or program factors that produce a particular result over a period of time. This is different from a lot of the operations that we've done in the past, because mostly we do operations like with our tools or something, house cleaning or something, to create an effect now. But this combines a number of features or parts of your knowledge and studies to carry out an effect over time. spells are not immediate. They take time. A spell could also be defined as a formalized intention that is carried out over time until completion. We use spells when we are unable to directly affect a situation or condition, especially when dealing with complex factors or barriers which require a lot of force to overcome. That's the time, of course. By the above definition, chants, litanies, sonics, and directives and limiters, which we'll study in this class, are all spells. They're types of spells in some cases. Prayers are also spells. Spells are energy matrices programmed to build momentum and overcome obstacles until the end goal is manifested. Now, this is an important factor you all need to consider. Unless otherwise programmed with directives and limiters, spells take the path of least resistance to the goal, much the same as lightning. So that's what we call an unprotected, undirected spell. While the goal may be appropriate relative to rules of the road and your intentions, the path of the spell may be highly destructive and not appropriate according to rules of the road in what it actually does, because it can take left turns, right turns, and so forth. For an example, when the entire civilized world prayed that something would rescue Germany from the inflationary depression after World War I, because it was dragging everyone down economically, and it was devastating sociologically. Without specifying what or how, those prayers brought Hitler to power. Hitler was the solution. Hitler tried twice before to take power, but failed both times. At the same time, the Jews were fervently praying to return to the Holy Land. However, at the time, the Jewish population was too large to successfully return to the Holy Land. They would have been killed off by the Arabs, or there wouldn't be appropriate room for everyone. Only a smaller population could successfully return. So the Jewish prayer, tied into the prayers that brought Hitler to power, and by the path of least resistance, Hitler's methods reduced the Jewish population so that their prayer of returning to the Holy Land could be realized. Anybody want to comment? I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff. No?
I never really quite thought of it, you know, I put those two together like that, but it makes absolute logical sense.
Yeah.
The way that you wrote it.
Cool. I'm glad you can see that. A person involved in a meditation group which taught people to get what they wanted using white light had similar trouble. The meditation group taught people to put the thing they wanted to manifest on a bulletin board and sit there and imagine what it would be like to have it, holding in mind no harm come to anyone. A lady with a really hard life wanted to pay off her house and her car and receive a reliable income. So she dealers was instructed. She took a picture of her mortgage and wrote paid on it. She does the same thing with the car and asks for $250. This was a while ago, guys. $250 free and clear a month. When someone asked her whether she was worried about how this manifestation would come about, She replied that she was not worried. So what happened? Her husband, who is a very stable but very quiet and meek person, instead of going to work one day, stopped at the liquor store, bought liquor, bought a gun, blew his brains out. The life insurance paid off the house and the car and gave the woman approximately $250 a month free and clear. He was the weakest link in the chain, so the spell worked on him. Now this is important, guys. This is the way this stuff works. Before designing or launching any spell, you must be very clear on the use of directives and limiters, basic magical operational laws that we've studied, like rules of the road in this case, and the terminology involved with the spell work. Remember, the universe doesn't care what you intend to do, just what you actually set into motion. Magic is a precision science, and altered procedures produce altered results. Litanies and chants. Many people confuse litanies with chants. They're not the same. A chant is any set of verbal commands or instructions to create a magical effect. A litany is a chant that is used to affect the operator or person saying the litany, whereas a chant is used to affect the environment, primarily, not the operator. So it says, as discussed in the Sonics class, this is useful. As discussed in the Sonics class, wherever you put your attention while you're using Sonics, saying verses, whatever, doing your novel beauty work, wherever you put your attention is where you will create the greatest effect. I.e., if you have it all back on yourself, then that's what you're affecting, which is why a lot of people don't see results in the environment. If you really extend those perceptics out into the environment, then you will see more. We haven't done the walking litany in the Navajo beauty way, but we have done the shower litany, and that's a litany. That's an example of the litany. The walking litany, which we will learn later, is used to create a stable datum or anchor points for the person saying it. The shower litany uses water energy plus some air energy to clear excess fire. Both the walking and shower litanies affect the person saying the litany. The verses used to charge the fireball and chalice are chants. With these verses, you're affecting the environment around you, specifically your tools, but cleaning your house and so forth, you're affecting that when you charge it for that, of course. Anytime more than one person is doing a chant, like a group, it is a chant, not a litany, because it affects more than one person, because you've got a group. It's a group function. If more than one person did the walking litany at the same time, it would become a chant. So, is that pretty clear to you guys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Between litanies and chants?
Good.
I assume so. If not, please speak up. Okay, so using Sonics and spell work, we won't cover because we haven't studied Sonics. So we'll go on to directives and limiters. Directives and limiters specify the what, how, and when factors of a spell. You always need to specify directives and limiters for candle and tarot spells. We will cover only one candle spell, single candle spells in this tutorial. Directives are the things you want the spell to achieve, and limiters are areas you want the spell to avoid. More specifically, they program the spell in terms of the purpose of the spell, how certain elements and energies will be used and combined, the safeguards on the spell, and when the spell will start and when will it stop. It makes sense. It's what draws the picture. Specifically, anything that is important in your directives and limiters, specify. That was a weird one. Specify anything that is important in your directives and limiters. For instance, if you're writing a spell for a new job, you may want to specify the job description, the amount of pay, type of company you want to be involved with, what kinds of benefits are involved, when you want the new job to start, type of boss that you will have, and so forth. And of course, even the working conditions or environment, whatever. I mean, whatever is important, you specify. Anything you don't specify is left to chance, and spells usually follow, as we said, the path of least resistance. Without directives and limiters, you may achieve your goal, but the spell may use methods that are illegal, dangerous, or harmful to self and others. And we see that fairly often in the commercial world, so to speak, of magic. Some people realize it and some people don't when their spell goes pickles on them, so to speak. Let's see, where was that? Okay. The directors and limiters should always be in legalese, legal language. Think the way a lawyer might think. It doesn't have to be stilted. It needs to be very clean and precise. When working on a contract, because that's what you're doing, you don't have to put anything in your directives and limiters that you will be able to take care of yourself. In fact, don't. Such as research on property values before buying a piece of property, or any attitudinal stuff that you have that might affect the spell you've got to take care of. One student developed and launched a spell for a new job without specifying in their directives and limiters that her salary comes from legal means. She ended up with an ideal job, wonderful working conditions, co-workers she loved. However, she had to, in quite a panic, and I witnessed all of this, had to quit the job when she discovered she was working for the mafia. And she was getting pretty high up in terms of the value to them. So if you guys are... You don't quit the mafia. It was quite a deal. We had to do quite a few manipulations to get her free. If your spell involves other people, be sure that the directors and limiters are not binding, referring back to rules of the road, taking away a person's choice or forcing them to do something against their will. If you feel that someone's attitudes will affect your spell, you can set up a limiter preventing that person's attitudes from affecting the spell, or invite powers and beings to help. Do not try to modify that person's behavior. That would be binding. You also need to avoid enforcers, this is important, or factors that force you to live your life a certain way in your directors and limiters. That becomes really, really a strange set of affairs. For instance, a student once specified that the universe not bring him more business that he could emotionally handle. After he launched the spell, which was a well-written spell, he broke up with his girlfriend under very, adverse circumstances and became an emotional wreck. The universe therefore sent him absolutely no business. In fact, so much so, he had to take the spell down or go bankrupt. When specifying numbers in your directors and limiters, such as age, salary, size, amounts of money, and so forth, use a range rather than a single number so your spell has more freedom. You don't bind your own spell. One student asked for $10,000 to manifest immediately. This is obviously not reasonable. Think of what that means. That means you light your candle, say your verses, and plop out of the sky, a bundle of $10,000 falls in your lap. That doesn't often happen. Remember, magic is also verbally ritual too. In the beginning, design your spells to create relatively small effects over a fairly short period of time. As you gain experience, you can increase the content and reach of your spells. Now, I know probably many of you will do like I did and go for the moon. But I'll tell you what, it isn't useful. You want to build confidence and you want to get build knowledge in how these work. Use limiters to tell the spell when to start and when to stop. You can even specify a delayed starting time for the spell using a limiter. In other words, you can write the spell, program it, and deliver it, but in the directors and limiters, you can inform the spell that it won't start for 2 months. There may be some reason, I'm just telling you, you can do that. Now, this is also very important. Let me ask you a question, Dan. You've probably heard people often use in their limiters or directors for the good of all.
Yes.
How useful is that magically?
Sounds like it would be too broad to be effective.
Correct. You sort of put yourself in a place where you've created no effect. Because first of all, the good of all possibly varies with each person's opinion depending on what you mean or what the spell takes it to mean and so forth. So instead of that, we use a little more defined limiter in that way. which is the one that's there. No one shall suffer harm, untimely death, or loss of property as the result of this vow. Or something similar. You can expand it if you feel you need to. It blocks the spell from taking certain harmful pathways and achieving its goal. And remember that we have that map divination ability that we've learned. So if you're writing a spell to buy a piece of property or something of that nature, it would be useful to do a map divination or a tarot reading or both to see if it's available within the parameters of where you want it. So questions or comments so far, Dan?
No, I'm with you.
Randy?
I'm with you.
Cool. Let's see, I wrote it all down and I don't know where I put it. Oh, God. Tom?
Yes?
Questions or comments?
No, it's really pretty clear. I mean, it just seems like it's very clear so far.
Yeah, well, you realize it's just sort of a technical set of steps. That's what it's meant to be. Okay, candle spells. A candle spell is a spell that programs one or more candles to act in accord with a spell's purpose, directives, and limiters, and verses. You always have verses as well, and your candles are always carved and anointed, which means painted. The candles energize, activate, and feed the spell, as well as assisting in programming the spell. The candle also translates the verses and directives and limiters into an actual energy matrix that has force in the world, as well as continually increasing the energy of the spell matrix, because that's the whole point. Because obviously spells do meet resistance. You'll find that out in your readings. And so this is how you overcome that resistance. Remember that a spell is a formalized intention, an actual energy form that overcomes obstacles to achieve a stated aim. Some of you, when you do your spells and you release them, you will definitely feel them. And we're not talking about an energy cone that's like the size of your head. We're talking about one that's oftentimes the size of a pretty big table and working with quite a bit of energy. So lighting the candle or candles, although we'll work only with a single candle spell, that's tough enough, of a spell, along with reading the spell verses, sets the spell into motion. Okay, so your first five steps of designing, testing, and launching a spell, candle spell, are as follows. Select your purpose for your candle spell. And remember that candle spells are useful when dealing with fairly complex situations or obstacles that require a good amount of force to overcome. And when I say fairly complex, having a number of factors involved. Do a 12-card base reading on the topic of your spell, just like we did a couple of weeks ago. For instance, if you were designing a spell to get a new job, you might do a reading with Eight of Discs, the career card. You will use the information in the upright and reverse flow lines
to assist you in creating your spell, because that tells you the forces you've got to work with, and it tells you the forces you've got to work against, and that you need to overcome. But that's not all it tells you, because sometimes it also tells you things that you are not attending to that you need to as well. Do a 12 card reading to find out whether a spell will work. After doing a base reading, you want to do another reading with the Magi on top and to the right of the original signifier. This tells you whether a spell will be effective in improving the situation. Reverse cards in this reading show you the issues that the spell needs to handle, or the issues that the spell cannot handle that you need to handle yourself. Pretty straightforward stuff. Write your directives and limiters based on the two readings and your own desires for the spell and the things that you know you want to achieve with the spell. Write your directives and limiters. Now you can, you should refer to the samples that we've given you in these notes, because they will help. Keep your directives clean, succinct, and to the point, same with limiters. Then do a reading on your directives and limiters. Now, how you do that is you write your directives and limiters on a neatly, not a lot of erasure and all that, on a piece of paper and key it on your plate as your directives and limiters for the spell. Place your directives and limiters just like it was a card. You can fold it up. That's no problem. On top and to the right of your original signifier and the Magi, then throw another 12-card reading. The reverse lines indicate the areas where the spell will encounter trouble or where you will need to deal with certain issues outside the parameters of the spell. You must, because otherwise you'll deceive yourself. Progress the reading once or twice to see if the issues resolved further in the future, because likewise they will. Spells take time to gather enough force to overcome obstacles. So once you've done your reading, if it looks like, too many reverse cards and too many obstacles, then adjust your directives and limiters. Rewrite them. And do a reading on them again until you get a clear reading without too many reverse cards and that looks helpful. Now, there are tricks to how you don't really interpret these readings the way you do normal readings, but there are tricks to how you can look at the cards on the table and tell what you've omitted in terms of limiters or what you've improperly directed. Such as it's Earth suit, it's probably something to do in physical realms or the money realms or something. That comes with a little practice, and I'll help you with that, of course. So I would not try to interpret the reading the same you would a regular reading. You're not looking for stories from past to future. Instead, you're looking for conditions that the spell will work on. You're looking for the reverse flow lines to become resolved in the future or for future lives. Not all of them. The ones that matter. If it's some little issue like two of discs reverse saying that you were not making very good choices on the world level, make better choices. You don't have to direct or limit that, and so forth. Okay, I'm going to skip the basic magical operational laws. We actually study them in a more advanced course, and they're not that useful for what you're doing here. So now, here are your sample directives and limiters. These are actual, so it's no point in my reading them off unless you all would like me to, so you can ask questions about them. Would that be helpful?
I don't think so.
I think it's pretty clear.
Okay. But bear in mind, these were written in 1990, and these were a while back. And so not every... So you think, well, wow. I'm going to do, I'm going to do a home locating spell. It does not mean that you can copy these directives and limiters from what we've done and that will work, because your conditions are going to be quite different from our conditions, or whoever did these. So just keep that in mind.
We already knew it was you, Alan.
Which one?
The house in Boulder.
Oh, okay. So, actually, I don't know if it was.
You told us a story about a house in
Boulder. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. I had to look at it. You're right. I didn't actually take it, you know. It was a practice spell. So, questions or comments on any of this? I mean, this is very, in a sense, mechanical, but it's very precise, and it's an art, too, because when you get a reverse line or a reverse set of cards, and sometimes the reverses, you know, you may want to look at the lines, because not so much, the past can help as a clue, but you can't change the past. But still it gives you an idea of where it's coming from, and that may be able to tell you whether it's your stuff that needs to be cleaned up or whether it's something that the spell has got to work on. Don't get discouraged. Sometimes I can get by with two changes or one change on directives and limiters, sometimes 10. It depends a lot on how complicated your spell is and how well you understand how you need to weave this thing to make it work. And like I say, we're never expecting all upright cards. That's absurd.
I see that this is very responsible, you know, in the steps that are being taken here. It just seems like it's a very responsible way to create this.
It is, but it's very protected. You don't have to worry that you're going to kill somebody.
Right.
Or that you're going to, you know, the whole point, the whole idea is a lot of times all that will really happen with your readings on your directives and limiters, it'll show you that you left something out that you just didn't think of.
Uh-huh.
And if you kind of look at what the card story tells you, a lot of times it'll pop right into your head.
Uh-huh.
You know? And that's what we want. We don't want to labor and suffer over these. We want them to be fun.
I just wanted to ask a question in terms of the candle spell. This is relying on fire energy, I assume. And
no.
Okay.
No. It's relying on whatever energy factors you program into the spell. Just because you light a candle, that doesn't mean that that's what the energy of the spell is. That is just a translator or a converter, a transformer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It transforms what you've put into verses, and we'll give you sample verses too, and carvings on your candles into energy. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
At that point, the candle is an energy source, but the whole spell matrix is an energy source.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you could say, well, energy is fire, so I agree with you to that extent, but don't get the idea that that means that this is a fire spell. That would be inappropriate. It may be an air spell.
Right, that was pretty much what I was trying to get to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
No. I just was going to ask, I mean, involving what you just mentioned. I mean, if it was something that had to do with an emotional issue, you know, I mean,
right.
I just was wondering if this was going to be appropriate for those types.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, indeed. And what's really neat, Tom, is that when you put this all together
mm-hmm.
with colors and verses, you still follow the rules that we learned way back in the beginning. You don't combine red-orange with water blue.
Right, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, in the painting and the carving and so forth, you use symbols that are compatible.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you a bunch of symbols. You don't have to make them up, but some you can. Simple ones like a dollar sign or dates or whatever seems essential that you want to state clearly in the program.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be a spell, like Marilyn could do a spell for having an effective learning program with her studies.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be primarily an air-oriented spell.
Sure.
So, I think I've covered the ground fairly well. So, what we're going to do is, in listening, I greet you. If that doesn't confuse you, some people find it confusing to do two greetings. If it's confusing, just do the one we do in the other class. And then you want to go through the steps, just like we outlined them. You want to do either using what you had written before and the readings up to where we stopped, or something different. Like I say, don't go too fancy. Don't go too big. And go ahead and for this week you want to pick a topic and do your attempt to do your five steps. I want you to at least get through one set of directives and limiters. If you get stuck, call me or email me or something.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay, so I have to tell you guys, this course is called Basic Magic, but do you understand that for most people that study magic in any form, this is fairly advanced magic?
I would say based on, you know, some of the books that are selling right now, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bubblegum.
Is not, and it's not meant to be. But this is the way that I can keep my promise to you all that we will do operations that bring harm to no one and create effects consistent with our operation, how you do your operation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Yes, indeed. So, bye for now.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.